Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We know that you have lots of other options out there. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. You can share this podcast with your friends or family. If you're just watching this, just understand there's an audio version of it too. You can subscribe and do all those things. If you're interested, since I mentioned we're also on Iconic, Iconic is offering you the ability to go try out their service for 10 days if you'd like. There's going to be a link in the show notes below. So if you're interested, just click there and check out what they're doing over there at Iconic. They're doing a lot of great original content, weekly shows, documentary movies, documentary series. There's obviously all of David's past work is there. And a whole lot more, a health and wellness component to it that has really grown up in the last 2 years, too. So I'd say it's as much a health and wellness platform as it is anything alternative media. But if you're interested, try it out. Why not? 10 days, check it out. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay, too. They've been a home for macroaggression. So, of course, we support them. And if they ask us to pass along the word, we are grateful to do that. Hey, listen, C60 Purple Power, they're making the best batch of C60 out there. What is C60, you say? Well, it is a naturally occurring carbon molecule comprised of 60 carbon atoms that form something that looks like a hollow soccer ball. They call it a free radical sponge. It sort of travels through your body with the ability to neutralize free radicals and reset itself again and again. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. The people that discovered C60 won the Nobel Prize for it. It has antioxidant efficacy several hundredfold higher than conventional antioxidants. It helps to maximize the efficiency of your cells. It lifts the oxidation burden off of your cells. So look, I've been taking it every day since they started sending it to me, which has been a little over almost a year and a half now. It's great. Every morning, just a spoon for me and a spoon for my cat, and we're good to go. So if you are in the market for something, the link is in the description as well. If you're looking for C60, go to C60purplepower.com, or you can go to shopc60.com. Use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself some money and all that good stuff. Plus, look, we're going to get into a topic, about maybe World War III. Later on in this episode. So in the run-up to wars, obviously supply chains get repurposed. They start to manufacture war-related items, and they start to be less efficient when it comes to dealing with the general public that's left at home. So given what we know, about supply chains already being broken down. Potential collapse of the US dollar, which is going to be a catastrophe for most people. The threat of World War III happening, COVID lockdowns, climate lockdowns, God knows what other sort of things they're going to throw at us. All I'm saying is you want to be prepared for whatever's coming your way. It's just common sense. But there's, you know, a lot of that common sense is lacking these days. But I will sleep better knowing that my audience is fully prepared. I have a sponsor for that. My Patriot Supply has set up a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com that you can go and take a look at what they've got available there. You can get a 4-week supply of food. You can get a 3-month supply of food. Actually, if you go to the website and you scroll down to the bottom, it will show you pictures of all the types of foods that come in the buckets, how many servings it will provide, and you'll be blown away. It's quite a bit, and it's pretty elaborate, and it's not like bread and water in here. I mean, they're talking about, they put together a real good selection of food. I've got buckets of food stored up just in case. Hopefully nothing happens, but this is the situation. This is what we're facing. You listen to these crazy conspiracy shows that your friends and family tell you will rot your brain. Well, maybe, but they're also going to get you thinking about things a little differently. They're going to get you seeing things on the horizon that the mainstream media is frantically trying to distract you from witnessing, which is a supply chain breakdown. And we know what that means. It's going to be rough when it comes to everything, but it's going to be dangerous when it comes to food. So be a week or two or three or four early rather than a day or two or three or four late. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Check it out. See what you think. Hopefully you don't need it. But look, it's always the possibility of a hurricane, right? Oh, I wish we were talking about something different. I'm so tired of the manipulation that's happening on the television sets and also on our, you know, through the internet, through social media, through traditional media, everywhere you can get the news. I'm tired of the lies. I'm tired of it. They're so obvious. I'm offended. I'm offended that they didn't have the decency to send professional liars to us. They give us garbage, junior varsity level bullshit lies with regard to this war that's happening in Ukraine and Russia. Now, I've dabbled in this a little bit, but again, I give this disclaimer every time and I'll give it again. I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of who's right and who's wrong, because there's a whole lot of history and backstory, over 100 years of this, between these two countries, between the relationships that they've had. There's been a famine that was engineered by Russia towards Ukraine that killed millions of people. It's a big problem, right? There's a lot of bad blood. And I recognize that that stuff happened, you know, 100 years ago or so, but it's never forgotten. So I don't want to pretend like I know exactly what's happening there from a geopolitical standpoint, because I don't. But what I do know is I do know a good media opportunity when I see one. I know lying when I hear it from the media. It's not hard. It's not like I'm some forensic media examiner that can like dig into the details and find the one. They're pretty obvious with it. They say certain terms. They use a language that's very similar. Once you know what you're looking for, you'll see it all the time. And then once you see it, you go, oh, well, this is what the, you know, sources close to the Pentagon, you know, sources familiar with the situation said X, Y, and Z. An unnamed Pentagon spokesman said this. You know, sources close to the president's thinking said, who cares? You know, it's just take all those qualifiers out, replace it with the CIA. CIA said this. CIA said the CIA wants you to believe this. CIA wants you to feel this way. So that's what it is. This is nothing new, nothing that we aren't prepared for, and nothing that we can't handle. But the problem is that the lies this time around are trying to kick off a war. a war between these two countries, like a real war, like the type of war that drags neighboring countries into it. And if you're dragging neighboring countries into wars in Ukraine, the chances are that you're going to drag a neighboring country that's a member of NATO in is very high. And if you get one, it's like a gang. If you fight one of them, you got to fight all of them. And so NATO works that way. If you attack one of their NATO allies, then the deal is all the allies have to jump in this fight. It's an outdated relic. It's used as a Western tool to club into submission anybody that thinks of partnering up with Russia. It's been very effective for a long time, but it's totally outdated. And NATO is a terrorist organization. It's what they are. They won't obviously say that. Russia, Russia's terrorists. They're terrible. Well, maybe they are. I know Russia's done some shitty things. I'm not going to take the side of any of these states. Okay, I'm a crazy person who speaks at anarchist conventions. Okay, I wrote this book, Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, with a guy that runs the largest anarchist convention in the world. You think I'm going to say Ukraine is the bad guy, but Russia's good? Listen, they're all fucking horrible. They're all bad. It's just a matter of degrees. Is Vladimir Putin the devil? No. According to the Western media, is he a great guy? No. You know, you can be somewhere in the middle. It is possible. We know Joe Biden is not a good guy. He's got 40 years of showing that he's a pit bull. Not now, of course. In this whatever state he's in now, he's Ozzy Osbourne in the White House, essentially. He's just shuffling around. Obama comes in to the White House, does a little speech and everything, and then walks away. Everyone goes and talks to cool guy, you know, the quarterback of the football team and everything, Barack Obama. Everyone goes and talks to him. Joe's just wandering around like Ozzy. I fully expected him to start screaming, "Sharon, the dog's crapped on the floor again." You know, this is who we have. But let's not pretend that that isn't dangerous in and of itself, because somebody is going to be making the decisions. And whether it's Joe Biden, the ghost of Joe Biden, or one of his CIA handlers behind him, it's all bad. So we're in a situation that nothing good comes of this. But I'll tell you one thing that is alarming. And nobody really takes Joe Biden seriously. I mean, he does a lot of talking. He shits his pants from time to time. He mumbles. He says words that don't exist. He, as the Hidden in Plain Sight guys describe when they talk about their favorite space psychic, Bobby Hemmett, I'd say that Joe Biden also speaks in cursive as well. When he tries to cram a variety of words into one word and then says it all at once, you get shabbatalakalva inflection, or whatever the word is that he said, that Tim Pool can regurgitate really well. He's a mumble mouth. His brain is oatmeal. But he's also doing something that's very dangerous. He's calling for a regime change of a G20 nation that has thousands of nuclear weapons and Vladimir Putin in charge of them. Now, you better be very careful when you call for regime change. You better be America 1980, not America 2022. America 2022, kind of a joke. Kind of a joke. America 2002, when Dick Cheney was running the show, You could call for regime change, because Dick Cheney was a serious dude who would, use any sort of methods at his disposal. I don't think people believe that Joe Biden would actually do what needed to be done to regime change Vladimir Putin. And if you half-assed that job, if you pulled the weeds out but didn't get the roots, you would have major problems. And let's be fair, there's no guarantee that America could regime change Russia. we have these fantasies of that, and it's so easy, and we just send a crew in there and destabilize. Oh, maybe that could work. But when the president of the United States goes on television in front of a camera with a microphone and says that the president of Russia, quote, cannot remain in power, that is a call for regime change. Regardless of what Jen Psaki from MSNBC thinks, soon to be MSNBC, sooner the better. Regardless of what State Department people say, his handlers that are all trying to walk this back, when you say he can't remain in power, you're calling for a regime change. That's what you're doing. Jen Psaki can say all day long it was taken out of context or he meant this or that or whatever. Stop. You're lying. I know what you're doing. We all know what you're doing. You're lying. We heard what he said. We know what he meant. He said the quiet part out loud. You know, is Putin's going, oh, so you guys called me paranoid for saying that the West wants to murder me. Where's my apology? We've got Sergey Lavrov, who won't talk to Anthony Blinken. Good. I like Sergey Lavrov. He's funny. He gets it. He knows what's going on. You see him sometimes. He's just shaking his head like these people out of their minds. Like, Anthony Blinken wants to talk to you. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken wants to talk to you. Put him to my voicemail, Lavrov says. Something along those lines. Just like China did when Blinken went to Alaska to meet with them. They met with him and then they just bitch slapped him and just said, we're not doing any of the things that you said. We're doing this, this, and this. And then they got up and they said, we're out of here. We left. So look, the Biden administration seems to want to start a war. A lot of American presidents seem to want to start wars. That's what they do. That's part of why they're selected to be the president, is because they're okay with starting wars, and that jumpstarts a huge military information terror complex, trillion-dollar apparatus that kicks into gear, and everybody in that segment of society starts buying beach houses, you know, because they're really making some money now. And so why, though? But why would the president want to start a war? Well, I'll tell you why. And it's the worst reason possible. But it's a reason that presidents use, because presidents are soulless scumbag animatrons. And that is to distract you and me from paying attention to the obviously poor job he's been doing at being the president of the United States. Now, it's like if you went into work and you were supposed to, like, it's Friday morning, and you know that on Friday at 11 a.m., you've got a big presentation due that you haven't done because you were out, you know, doing other stuff, partying your brains out last night. And instead of just saying, I'm sorry I didn't do my presentation like I was supposed to, you burn the entire building down. That's what Joe Biden is doing. I'm sorry I'm shitty at being a president. Let me distract by starting World War III, where millions of people will die, so that you don't remember that I'm this bad president. Well, I got news for you. Nobody's ever going to forget how awful you are at being the president. Don't worry about that. You could save all the kittens from all the trees from this day until the last day of your presidency, and we will still remember you as the guy that wanders aimlessly through the grass at the White House, that goes to the cocktail parties in the Oval Office, and nobody will talk to you. The guy that gave press conferences, not in the White House where he's supposed to be, but in some soundstage somewhere. We'll remember you for all those things. Much like I will always remember George H.W. Bush as the president that threw up on the Japanese prime minister, I will always remember Joe Biden as the president who shit his pants while with the Pope. And I think that's important for people to always remember. But look, you start a war to distract from things when you're a shitty human being. Joe Biden is a shitty human being. We've established that. We don't even have to dwell on that for too much longer. But, you know, he's distracting from not just low approval ratings, but massive inflation, astronomical gas prices. He has a vice president that's more disliked than he is, which is almost impossible to do. You know, and then he goes out and he accuses he says that the United States will use chemical weapons on Russia if they attack if they don't stop their attacks in Ukraine. He says that the United States would use chemical weapons, and then the White House immediately walks that back, right? Because they're like, you can't say that. You can't say that. Then he lets it slip to the U.S. Army Rangers that he's meeting with in Poland that, you know, he says, well, in Ukraine, you know, they're so brave and they're so tough and they're fighting there and they're doing that. You'll see when you get there. And they're all like, what? What do you mean we'll see when we get there? We're in Poland. He's like, oh, you're in Poland now. But you'll see what I'm talking about in Ukraine. Yeah, it's crazy there in Kiev. You know, where you're going in 72 hours. Shh, don't tell anybody. We're not supposed to talk about that. So this is, and you know, also since I'm adding this to the list of things he's trying to distract from, let's not forget his son's laptop. I mean, again, conspiracy theory 18 months ago, conspiracy fact now. So the next time there's some new revelation that comes forward and the alternative media is saying, hey, there's something to this. There's actually something to this. And the mainstream media is saying, nothing to see here. You're all going to get banned off social media. This is not true. Fact checker said it's not true. I just want you to immediately take your mind back to, oh, this sounds like a Hunter Biden's laptop situation. Because most of the time, that's what it is. So when the media is telling you there's no story there, that's how you know there's most definitely a story there. So he's looking to distract from all of these things. I can't blame him. I can't blame him. If I had this many disasters happening in just a year of being president, I'd be looking for a distraction too. Of course, I'm not a psychopath, so I wouldn't start a war in which people are murdered to distract from my bad job. I just would try to do a better job. But I think what we see is what we're going to get with Biden. I don't think he's one of those distance runners that, like, in the last half of the last lap of the race is going to really bring it up and just start making his move. I don't think that's going to happen with Joe Biden. I don't think he's going to make it. He's going to go down. He's going to go down like Zola Bud, barefoot and in a heap in tears. So let's talk about something. Look, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine is serious business. There are people being killed. At least that's what's being reported. It's never a good situation. But can we try to find the humor in the absurdity of it all? Can we? Because I love to do that. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the people that are having actual problems there. I recognize that those problems are real. But I also recognize that in America, we develop fake solutions to problems that we create and then pat ourselves on the back for being so concerned about the other side. And where I'm going with this is in the context of the things that have been banned by the retard brigade in Russia, that the items, the companies, the services, the all of this stuff. This is we started to see almost right away the push for certain mega corporations were saying that they were pulling out of Russia. you know, as a sign of solidarity with Ukraine, I guess, or sign that, you know, these, we will not stand by and allow the, you know, a country to just arbitrarily invade another country on bullshit pretexts, unless it's America, of course. And then America can do that every 4 or 5 years. But if it's not America, then it's definitely a problem. And when Russia does it, then they're the worst. And so we immediately have to remove 850 McDonald's restaurants from Russia, because that'll teach them. That'll teach them. The irony, okay, of removing McDonald's, the most unhealthy fast food in the world, from withdrawing that from a country as punishment to them is hysterical to me. But look, you don't make this decision. I remember being in college in business classes and reading about the, like, a case study where we worked for a while on the system in which McDonald's entered the Soviet Union. It was fascinating how they did it. There were certain rules that they had to play by, obviously some laws, but what wound up happening was that they built two McDonald's next to each other, one that took rubles and one that took dollars. And they used the rubles to pay the rents on both of them, and they used the dollars to pay for materials for both of them, like food costs and everything like that. It was a fascinating system that they had, and McDonald's was very proud of how they were able to crack that, that, you know, to break through the Iron Curtain and get into the communist country. And we were going to show them, you know, it was going to be like, well, we'll show it. We'll give you a little taste of capitalism. And now McDonald's is leaving. All 850 stores are closing up. See, now that is going to be a problem. If I'm a McDonald's shareholder, my response is, where are you going to make up the lost revenue from those 850 stores that you worked very hard to build and staff and train and create a whole system there? That stuff doesn't happen overnight. That takes a while, especially in the way in which McDonald's infiltrated the Soviet Union, which took many years for them to be able to pull that off. That's not something you walk away from easily. And yet they did. And they weren't alone, okay? 1,000 Kentucky Fried Chickens closed down, 50 Pizza Huts, and 800 Burger Kings. You can almost feel Russia getting healthier just already, just by closing that. Coke is boycotting them. Oh, really? Coke is boycotting them? You know, it because Coke cares so much about doing the right thing, as they're simultaneously holding training sessions telling their employees to be less white. The Ukrainians are white. Should they be less white? Oh, I see. It only works when it's shitting on white men in America, but otherwise it's fine. Do you sell Coke in Saudi Arabia? Yeah? You sell Coke in Saudi Arabia? You don't have a problem with their methods, but Russia's the problem. Okay, got it. Yeah. All right. So New York City restaurants with Russian names have been closed down. This is what we did when the French weren't real fond of joining us for the Iraq War. Do you remember what we did to them? We said, fuck you, French, and your French fries. We're going to call them freedom fries from now on, because this is America. And when America tells you to get involved in a war in which a bunch of your people are going to get slaughtered for no good reason, you fucking do it, man. Freedom fries. This is performance art. This is what idiots do. This is what retards do. This is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. But it's going to get worse. Wisconsin Mustard Museum. First of all, can we acknowledge that there is a mustard museum in Wisconsin? Totally disgusting. But Wisconsin's Mustard Museum has removed the Russian mustard. what will we do? Could you imagine being the general manager of the Wisconsin Mustard Museum and going, you know what I'm going to do, honey? When I get to work today, I'm going to take that Russian mustard out. I'm going to show them fucking commies what's up. And doing that and being like, fuck yeah. Saving democracy. The media is extremely powerful. I bitch about them all the time. I am still surprised at how much pull they have, that they can get people thinking that that is a solution to this problem, that you're going to remove Russian dressing from grocery stores. Russian dressing isn't Russian. It just says Russian dressing. But I don't want to tell these people. I've let them go. Let them keep going. Yeah, ban more stuff, man. What are you going to do? Next thing you know, you're going to be telling me that Russian cats are banned from the International Cat Federation. They are. They ban Russian cats. The Russian blue style of cat is banned. You know why? Because fuck you, that's why. I stand with Ukraine. You stand with Russia, you Russian cats. I'm not even making this up. I know it sounds like I'm making it up. Opera singers of Russian descent, Russian heritage, opera singers were banned from the Met in New York. Tchaikovsky's music was pulled. The Russian and Belarusian athletes from the Beijing Paralympics. This is the paralyzed version of Olympics. They were banned. Well, it is Beijing Paralympics, so I would assume that in Beijing they just shoot you or put you in a COVID camp or something. I don't know. I might be wrong. Canadian Hockey League banned the Russian kids. Yachts, all the Russian oligarchs' yachts are getting picked up. I mean, it's 2,000 Starbucks closed in Russia. Again, let's just talk about this from a business standpoint, from a logistics standpoint. Do you know how much effort and work goes into closing 2,000 Starbucks stores? You better be damn sure you never want to reopen those. You better be damn sure that you know how to deal with the lawsuits that are coming from that. You've just simultaneously fucked all of your employees there. You've put them all out of work. You've screwed the suppliers, your suppliers. You've wasted all your money on advertising, sunk costs, all that stuff. The integration that happens between a U.S. company and a Russian company, all how you measure and quantify that, I don't know. All of that stuff wasted because MSNBC told you you're supposed to hate Russia, so now you go and close 2,000 of your stores. That's not accidental. That's a coordinated move. To have all of these companies, Yum Brands, which is KFC, Pizza Hut, we've got Burger King and Coke. And this isn't Bob's Pizza Place that just decided to up and close. These are global brands that have all decided to do this. This was planned. This was planned. Facebook, who will ban you. They have banned me. They kicked me, put me in a 30-day Facebook prison for posting the image of a bulldozed Sandy Hook school. And on that image, below it, it said, now that's how you destroy evidence. I didn't make any comment. I posted that. I got put in Facebook jail for 30 days for posting that. But it's fine. Facebook is allowing people to call for violence against Russians. But if I post a Sandy Hook meme, I get put in Facebook jail. But if while posting that meme, the caption was "fuck Vladimir Putin," I'd be totally fine. That's the insanity that we're living in here. And I love the Pornhub says, we're out of Russia. Everyone's like, they threw you out of there a while ago. They're like, well, yeah, but we're technically out of there. So Pornhub parachuting in with the virtue signal. You guys were never there. Adidas, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, Omega Watch, Estee Lauder, Victoria's Secret, Estee Lauder, Ron Lauder, head of the World Jewish Congress, Victoria's Secrets. We know about Les Wexner, co-founder, head of the World Jewish Congress there too. It's a lot of coordination, a lot of brands that all have friends that know each other that all decided all at once to pull out of Russia, wouldn't you say? I'm sure that's just a coincidence. Russian tennis player Daniil Medvedev must denounce Putin in order to play in Wimbledon. For those of you that aren't tennis fans, Wimbledon is the tennis tournament that happens right outside of London. And in order for the Russian tennis player to play in Wimbledon, he first was required to denounce Vladimir Putin. By the way, a move that could potentially get him harmed when he comes home. Not by Putin himself, but maybe somebody close to him. A strategically dangerous thing to advise somebody to do. I'm going to go through a list of some of the companies that have pulled out of Russia, either partially or fully. And the list, once I get done with the list, then I'll explain why I think it's significant. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list. It's just the list of a lot of the big brands that you would recognize. And this is in alphabetical order, so there's no priority to the way in which these come out. But let's start with this. Leaving the Russian market and all that entails of walking away from a market with 140 million people that are possible customers, and you just up and leave. Okay. Apple, Amazon, Audi, the BBC, BMW, Boeing, British Petroleum, Cadillac, Chevrolet, Dell, Disney, because they have standards, Dropbox, EA, Electronic Arts, video games, ExxonMobil, Facebook, FedEx, FIFA, Ford, Google, Harley Davidson, Hewlett Packard, Instagram, Intel, Jaguar, Land Rover, Lenovo, LinkedIn, Reid Hoffman, World Economic Forum, Maersk, which is the largest shipping company in the world, MasterCard, Mercedes, Microsoft, Mitsubishi, Netflix, the NHL. They certainly do love Russian players. Oh, but we hate Russia. Nike, Nintendo, Nokia, OnlyFans, getting down to the real shit here, PayPal, PlayStation, Porsche, Renault, Samsung, Shell, Snapchat, Sony, Spotify, TikTok, Toyota, Twitter, UEFA, Universal, UPS, Visa, Volkswagen, Volvo, Warner Brothers, YouTube, and Zoom. So what I said about them having something in common was that if you go and look at the preferred partners list of the World Economic Forum, you'll find almost all these on there. So again, this is not accidental. This is by design. Interesting fact, Nestle, who is a wicked global food company that should be broken up into a million pieces. But Nestle didn't leave Russia. So instead, they got cyber attacked and criticized by Zelensky. I'm sure that's all just a giant coincidence, though, right? So those are the corporations that have just decided that it's better for them to not make money. It's better for them to virtue signal on a war that may or may not actually be playing out as we're told it is, against a proxy, Ukraine, which is building bioweapons labs for America and actively being recruited to join NATO, which Russia has a problem with, and rightly so. So these companies all just decided they're going to leave. Like, there's global conflict happening all over the place. These companies never picked a side between India and Pakistan. Why are they picking a side now? And why are they picking? I mean, if you want to leave a market, you could leave Ukraine. You could leave the Ukrainian market, the poorest country in Europe. Probably not even notice it in your stock price, but you're going to leave Russia? Why? You've already spent the time and energy, the sunk costs of setting up facilities there, distribution hubs, Russian speakers, software system, dealing with a foreign language, typing in Cyrillic, all the things that have to go on to deal with, to work in Russia, an understanding of the culture, an understanding of marketing, of how this works, and do all of that work to just pull all your stuff out on a whim? No way. They have to be being compensated somehow. They simply have to be. Now, we'll probably not find out about it for two decades, but you can't get the CEOs of these corporations to act against their own best interest when their compensation packages are tied to stock prices. You're going to tell a guy that he's got to pull out of a major global marketplace and know what that's going to do to their revenue and know what it's going to do to all the costs, all the costs associated with just walking away from that? You're going to tell that guy to do that, knowing what it'll do to his stock price, and you think he's going to do it voluntarily? No way. There's no way. It was made to happen. But we know that the push for war is going well when they call in the big guns. And by the big guns, I mean TikTok stars. Look, I didn't like the orange man in the White House either, okay? I just don't like these people. But the Biden administration is the laughingstock of the world. They're really, if you were trying to be this cringy and incompetent, you probably couldn't do it any better than Joe Biden and the things that he talks about, Kamala Harris and the word salad that she's involved in. She's pontificating and trying to explain to some poor bastard about the importance of time, and I'm listening to her and I feel like my brain's just leaking out of my ears, and I'm just going, oh my God, you know, that administration. You remember Kamala Harris bringing the kids in? It's always with the kids that were actors, and she's like, we're going to pretend like we're talking about space, and it's so great. Oh my God, guys, we're like totally going to space. And all the kids had masks on, remember? And they were like, they all look like hostages. And then you found out that they were paid actor kids, because you can't convince normal kids to get in a devoted afternoon to hanging out with Kamala Harris. So you have to pay them money to do that. And of course, they had to do that again, where they brought in TikTok stars. I didn't think they physically brought them in. I think they did this over Zoom. TikTok stars and influencers to meet with the White House so that they could get briefed on what's going on in Ukraine. you have to take a step back and appreciate how insane this is, right? This is the equivalent of Krispy Kreme donuts for a year. It is. It's a sign that things are not going well. When the media, nobody's listening to the media. They think that the media is lying to them because they are. Nobody's listening to the White House because they think that they're lying to them, which they are. Joe Biden says one thing. Kamala Harris says another. That is technically true. She does say another thing, but it never has anything to do with what Biden's talking about. Jen Psaki and that crew of pathological liars, they then come out and have to walk back everything that he said. So there's a fracture in the communication coming out of the White House, which there should never be. That should be a united front. It's not. With the media working hand in glove, it's not. I mean, they're trying. The media is trying desperately to work with the Biden administration, but it's really hard. Because Kamala Harris has just now had her 12th different employee leave because nobody wants to work with her. And I don't say this to be mean, though I fully recognize that it's going to come across as being mean, but she's one of the dumbest people I've ever seen in public life. And that would be one thing if your job, if you were in charge, if you had some sort of innocuous job that didn't mean anything. You're the vice president of the United States of America. Start acting like it. I mean, in whatever that means, start doing something else, because whatever Kamala Harris is doing, it's not working. It's not working inside the White House because everyone's leaving. It's not working with the press because nobody knows what she's talking about. It's not working in the polling because she's at the bottom of the polls. It didn't work when she was running for president because she got as many delegates for president as I did. So, you've got a deeply unpopular, flawed team running this. And they realize that their messaging is so poor that the best option is to bring in high school kids that don't know anything about Ukraine, probably can't find it on a map, and they're going to tell them what they need to know so that they can then go out and tell the rest of us so that we can get informed on Ukraine. And they wonder why we don't take them seriously. So, look, here's the honest truth of the situation. And that is that the United States needs Russia. And the United States has been building up Russia for over 100 years. This idea that Russia's the enemy and that we hate them and that we have to fight them. We work with them. We work with Russia quite a bit. We work with them on the space program. We still do work with them on the space program. You know, I've talked about this guy before, and if you aren't following his work, you really should. John Rappaport is his name. He has a website called nomorefakenews.com, and he's so ahead of the curve that his nomorefakenews.com domain that he bought I think it was 2000 or 1999 or something like that. So he recognized fake news before anyone, and he's been doing a great he writes blogs every day. You can sign up for his newsletter. They're free. He's deep in medical tyranny, always has been. But he also lately has been writing about, he's been talking again about some of the interactions and work that he did with Anthony Sutton, passed away 15 years ago. He was an older gentleman. He was born in like 1925. He lived a long, long life, and he wrote books about how the West built the Soviet Union through the oligarchs of Rockefeller and Carnegie and these industrialists that were, and Henry Ford. They were building plants in Russia that were made for cars and civilian methods, but all of those factories were built in a way that they could easily be switched over to military. It didn't require any sort of modification. And the reason why they were done that way was because, in fact, they were built for military purposes, but the cover story was that they were going to make it look like it was for commercial purposes. And in fact, it was a little of both, because these, you know, Henry Ford and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and all them were heavily involved in the creation of Russia. And they all, of course, make a lot of money during wars and the like. And what John Rappaport has been talking about is how much America was involved in this. And that really the Soviet Union, as it stood, would not have come into existence without the West. In fact, the Bolshevik Revolution was financed by the West. So, and these guys were parts of that. So it was a reminder about, you know, about the American oligarchs financing Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution with loans from Rockefeller banks. And, but this isn't ancient history for World War One or World War Two. This also was happening when Ford car factories were building trucks in the Soviet Union, but those trucks were being sent to North Vietnam. And so you had a situation where the Ford motor industry under a different name, of course, in the Soviet Union, was building facilities and allowing the production of trucks, military trucks, that were being used against American soldiers in Vietnam. So these guys don't care. They'll play both sides. There's no loyalty. There's no rah, 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 America first. They would prefer you not know that, of course. But Henry Ford should have been hanged for his role in this. Prescott Bush should have been hanged for his role in dealing with the Nazis. You know, but this happens all the time. So our relationship with Russia is very complicated. And you know, it's funny because when Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump and immediately started blaming Russian collusion and all this stuff, And that, you know, saying Trump, they loved Trump, you know, that was their guy. They wanted Trump there. He's a Putin puppet. You remember all that stuff? You know, the interesting thing about that, and maybe they did want Donald Trump there. But it wasn't because he was a Putin puppet. In actuality, the Russians wanted Hillary. And we know that there was no Russian collusion on the election. We know that. I mean, Hillary Clinton is a deeply unpopular candidate that has no sense of self-awareness. She thinks everybody loves her. Most people can't stand her. But that's a narcissistic personality trait, which Hillary has, you know, in spades, of course. But the irony is that the Russians had actually been working with Hillary Clinton. If anyone would have appealed to Russia as somebody to become the next president, because we know we can work with them, it would have been Hillary Clinton, because of the relationship that she had with Frank Giustra, who is one of the largest donors to the Clinton Foundation. What a surprise, that global scam. And what he was doing was running a company called Uranium One in Canada. And that Uranium One, the company, is responsible for mining 20% of the United States uranium, the uranium that we need for nuclear missiles and things like that. That company was sold. Uranium One was sold to Russia, and it had to be signed off on by Hillary Clinton. And it was. And then magically, $126 million from that deal wound up going to the Clinton Foundation. So don't tell me that Russia wanted Donald Trump because they knew they could work with him. Russia wanted Hillary Clinton because they already had worked with her. They had already established a relationship. So I'm not interested in hearing about how the United States and Russia are at some sort of war. We work together. This is theater. This is theater to demonize Russia. They've got some plan up their sleeves because they've got all the corporate part, all the World Economic Forum corporate partners pulling out of the country. You've got Russia, who's a member of the World Economic Forum. Vladimir Putin, a member, took his picture down, though. They thought it was a little tough. This could be just a gigantic puppet show. But I have said this before, and I still think it holds true. We talked about CyberPolygon, which is the potentially false flag cyber attack that the World Economic Forum was simulating in 2020. The one country that was, one prominent country that wasn't a part of that was China, actually. Russia was a part of it. They had many people participating in CyberPolygon. So when I heard that, and I thought, well, if you're going to need a bad guy to blame it on, why don't you blame it on the guy that's not there in China? And I still think that that's the most reasonable and logical thing to have happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if CyberPolygon happened and they placed the blame on Russia, because Russia seems to be taking the blame for everything these days. But it's a little bit tricky because Russia was at CyberPolygon. So they would know what was going on. I guess that remains to be seen how that will be pulled off, but it's a bit murky because these groups are all swimming in similar waters, and we're making decisions as a nation in America that are counterproductive to our best interest. When you sanction countries like Russia, and Russia says, fine, we just won't sell you fertilizer. We won't sell you potash. We won't sell you uranium. We won't sell you platinum, palladium. We won't sell you gas. You're in Europe? We'll just turn the switch off on you. Uh-oh. But if your plan is to destroy the world so that you can build it back better, you're on the right track. You certainly would be on the right track. There is a... Don't you love that in America, we're getting this constant, when it comes to like the gasoline prices, we're getting this constant droning in the media. Putin's price at the pump. It's all Vladimir Putin's fault that you're paying $6 a gallon for gasoline. It has nothing to do with our supply chain issue, or that we killed the Keystone Pipeline, or that we make all these ridiculous demands of our trucking industry. It's none of that. Or that we've cut back production, or that we're sitting on more oil than fucking Venezuela, but we refuse to drill for it for some reason. Really? It's Putin's fault? No. The truth of the situation is that the American economy is collapsing, and it's everybody's fault. It's Barack Obama's fault. It's George W. Bush's fault. It's Donald J. Trump's fault. And it's Joe Biden's fault. All those people, all the people running central banks, all those bankers, all those scumbags, it's their fault. Putin's fault? No, but I'll tell you what. If this is some sort of reaction just an obvious reaction. If they're not playing 4D chess here, right? It's just bad decision making being happening on the part of America. Then the most troubling component of this is the fact that when you cut off Russia from the SWIFT banking system, the interbanking international wire transfer system that routes everything, at least at some point routes through New York and then off to its final destination. That is, when you cut that off, a country off from that, you're doing huge damage to them. North Korea, Cuba, Iran have faced that, and now Russia with the SWIFT sanctions. Now, they threatened that in 2014 when Russia was annexing Crimea, but they didn't actually go through with it. They just threatened it. But it was enough for Russia to start thinking about this. They go, well, this would be a problem if they eventually cut us off. So we're going to build out a different system. We'll build up a backup. And of course they did. And the Chinese did as well. And when the real when the SWIFT sanctions happened for Russia this time around, Russia's like, fine, we'll just use our own system. We'll do it a different way. An inconvenience, a pain in the ass, not good, but we've got a backup plan. And you know what wound up happening? They decided to take a play out of America's playbook, and they said, you know, we've got all this oil and gas. Maybe we should just start only accepting rubles for it. You know how America has the petrodollar arrangement where they'll only accept dollars for the oil that Saudi Arabia pumps and creates an artificial demand for those dollars because every country needs to have them because you've got to have them in order to buy. It's like if you could only buy food with Ethereum, then you would be forced to have at least some Ethereum, whether you liked it or not. That's the only crypto that'll allow you to buy food. You'd have to have it. And it's like that with the dollar. If the only way you can buy oil is with the dollar, you may hate the dollar, but you got to have some of it, right? So that's the petrodollar arrangement. Saudi Arabia lists their oil priced in U.S. dollars and U.S. dollars only, and will only accept U.S. dollars for it. America protects Saudi Arabia from all the shit that they get into. So that's the arrangement. Well, Russia says, well, you know, first of all, we can cut off gas supplies to Europe overnight and you're fucked. But we'd only be hurting ourselves if we did that because we're in the oil and gas business. I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? We'll sell it to you, but we're only going to sell it to you for rubles. So you've taken us off the SWIFT banking system, but now you guys are going to need to get back on it. Or you're going to need to use our Russian version of the SWIFT banking system if you want to deal with us. So what are you going to do? You got a deal. So simultaneous to this, China approaches Saudi Arabia and says, you know, back when you guys cut that petrodollar arrangement, the United States was buying 2 million barrels of oil a day from you. Now they're only buying 500,000 barrels a day. We, China, we're buying more than 2 million barrels a day. That arrangement that you have with the United States, that's kind of old, don't you think? Maybe we should consider doing the petro yuan instead of the petro dollar. I mean, after all, we're your biggest customer. You need to please us. And America, they're not loved around the world like they might have been back in the early 70s when Kissinger lined up this whole thing. If the petrodollar arrangement goes away, then the dollar stops being the world's reserve currency. If the world's reserve currency is no longer the dollar, the value of the dollar will drop substantially, pretty much overnight, and will continue to fall for the next couple of years until we get what Dylan Radigan described as America becoming Brazil, which is just like a huge 80% of the population is just in poverty. And then there's just like 20% that are doing better. Or maybe 19% doing better and 1% that's doing really well. Then they did something else too. Russia did something else, because as if that wasn't enough. Then they went and they said, you know, we've been kind of on the down low buying a bunch of gold, and we mine gold, you know, so we've got gold and we buy gold, and we're going to back our ruble at a rate of 5,000 rubles per gram of gold. And so now they went and backed it by gold. So if you take a look at the chart of the value of the ruble, it goes along straight and then it drops when America slaps the sanctions on it, the SWIFT sanctions and all of the other things. You know, when Victoria's Secret's pulled out, you know, the ruble just dropped. And then the chart goes right back up, like in a V shape, right back up. And that right back up part is when they decided and made the announcement that they were backing their ruble with gold. America is stepping on rakes all over the place. They just can't do it right. They just can't seem to get it figured out. Joe Biden is out there making moves with Anthony Blinken, who nobody will talk to. Mohammed bin Salman won't return Biden's phone calls. Xi Jinping won't talk to Blinken. Sergey Lavrov won't talk to Blinken. We're a joke. We're a joke. I take no pleasure in saying that as an American, but we've been on top for a long, long time, and it's over. It's over. And these politicians that are out there making these decisions for people are creating catastrophes that we're going to have to live through. So I know it's tempting to say, Russia, Russia, Russia. Russia did it. It's all their fault. But the truth is, it's not their fault. It's our fault. We've done this to ourselves. This is self-imposed. And we frankly have nobody to blame but our illustrious dear leaders. If you like this episode, you can share it with your friends and family. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. All the books are available on Amazon. Just search Charlie Robinson. You'll find The Octopus of Global Control, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and also Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards. Take care, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.